Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey yo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox postgame show, presented by PointsBet. Use promo code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Welcome into Studio A of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm Sean Anderson, the host of the CHGO White Sox postgame show. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean underscore W underscore Anderson. And since it's an away game, I am very lucky to have the full CHGO beat with me. Got Vinny Duber on the far left. Follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He's a CHGO White Sox beat writer. And the man in the middle is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him on Twitter at EchnerWall23. He's the CHGO White Sox community leader. We are coming to you after a White Sox loss. They lose 3-0 out in Seattle, losing the second game of the series, setting up a rubber match for tomorrow. Johnny Cueto was good in this one. Logan Gilbert a little bit better. Probably the big news, Luis Robert leaving with an injury. Again, we'll discuss it and more here on the CHGO White Sox postgame show. But first, we didn't say this. Probably should have mentioned it. Romy Gonzalez, happy birthday. You picked him as your pick to click.
I did.
And without even knowing it was his birthday.
I didn't know it was his birthday, but happy birthday, Romy. You did not click tonight.
No, and no one really did. For the White Sox, they had 7 hits. Can you guess how many were singles? 6 out of the 7 were singles. They left 9 runners on base and were 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position. And really, they had about one threat this entire game. One out, runner on third, and Jose Abreu was up. Possibly, you know, sac fly scores the runner. But outside of that, the White Sox really weren't able to do anything. What do you make of this one, Herb?
I mean, same old with the White Sox. I mean, Logan Gilbert came to pitch today with his, 9 strikeouts. He was good. He was really good today. But the White Sox were hitting him really hard. I think I counted 8 hard hit balls, 95-plus miles per hour off the bat from White Sox hitters. But most of them just went right at Seattle Mariners defenders. So, good plan, good process. The results weren't good, but also 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position. That one hit, I think, was a single up the middle where Jose Abreu really, you know, he was running well, and the ball was hit just hard as hell. So there was no way that Joe McEwing was going to send him there because he would have been out by a good margin. So execution on with runners in scoring position are a thing that's happened again. I know people are going to focus on the one play where Gavin catches a ball in right field and this runner from second tags up and goes to third, and then Yoan Moncada doesn't get the ball. The ball kind of takes a hop on him, and then Johnny Cueto's not backing up the ball well enough, and that ball hits the camera, so the runner goes home right there, scores the one run that they scored before the 2-run home run in the 8th. That's a big thing, but very hard to win when you score 0 runs. Only way you can do this, and Chris Kamka schooled me on this a couple years ago because I said it's impossible to win with 0 runs. It's possible if a team forfeits, you get like 9 runs because you didn't score them, but they're 9 runs that are given to you. So it's very impossible. It's almost impossible to score or to win games when you don't score runs. So, yes, that's a big play. And yes, those guys messed up. But damn, you need to score some runs to win games.
Maybe new question, White Sox. Should the White Sox forfeit every game versus right-handed starting pitching?
No.
They lose most
good,
of them.
It's not a well, but they lose all of them if it was yes, the other way around there, and true. that could end up being the difference in this very dull AL Central race.
Yeah, I mean, looking at this dull AL Central race, you look at the Twins, who somehow are still in second place. I thought they were dead about 2 weeks ago. They're still in second place. We're able to take one game from the Sox this past weekend. They got rained out in New York, but they're going to have a doubleheader tomorrow against the Yankees. I doubt that goes well for them because Minnesota playing New York always goes poorly. So, this is just a pretty huge game for the Sox that this set up tomorrow because you got to keep pace with Cleveland at this point. I think a loss tomorrow might be real detrimental because sweeping four games against Oakland seems very difficult. And I think if you're going to look for a good road trip, I think 5-2, 4-3 is probably what you're shooting for. It just gives you a little bit of breathing room so you don't have to go 3-4 against Oakland. I think tomorrow going up against Luis Castillo and you have Michael Kopech on the bump for the Sox, it's shaping up to be a massive, massive game, I feel, for the Sox and their AL Central hopes.
It's vital. They need to win, as you said. Oakland's been a house of horrors for the White Sox. No matter how bad the Oakland A's have been, same thing with the Kansas City Royals. Going to Oakland is a thing that the White Sox don't do well usually. I know lately they've probably done better than most times, but I just think of all these bad games in the Oakland Alameda Coliseum, and it's just getting worse. Like, I'm sure the conditions for the visiting clubhouse are crap. Being in that city is depressing. And that stadium is huge, a big football stadium. I can't wait till they move to Vegas. Just hurry up and do it.
It has a ton of bugs in it, too, right?
Yeah, and possums.
There's possums. There's worse than bugs. I was there last year, and my computer was attacked by ants. This year, the problem is...
Why didn't you want to go back? You didn't beg Jake to go back to Oakland?
No, I was like, you know what? I think I can skip Oakland this year. This year, though, there's worse things because possums live in the ceiling of the press box. Jesus. So your computer is not the only thing at risk of being attacked, so is the top of your head by an angry possum. Bring your brooms, I guess, when you go to cover the team in Oakland.
Bring your brooms and gloves. You might catch a foul ball or you might catch a flying possum falling from the ceiling.
Yes.
A very eventful trip out to Oakland. Right now the Sox sit three games back of the Guardians. Guardians are 70-64. Sox are 68-68 at 500 for the 25th time. This year, the Guardians have taken care of business. They've won two straight against the Royals, and mainly that's why I can't get too excited about the Sox going 5-2 in that seven game stretch since Tony has been out. Sox go 5-2, and yes, it all looks great. They're hitting 1.8 home runs per game, which is better than the .08 they were hitting in the first 128 games. But what comes next is the 133rd game, which brings you right back down to reality. A lot of these same issues we've seen with the Sox. They faced a lot of right-handed pitching and couldn't figure it out today. You mentioned the main gaffe that happened in the fourth inning. Gavin ends up trying to throw to third, not cut off by Elvis Andrus, not picked up by Yoan Moncada, backed up by Johnny Cueto, and very odd to see it perfectly hit the camera and have that perfect.
It was kind of awesome, to be honest. Like, I know Sox fans weren't happy about it, but like, that's probably the best angle of a play you're ever going to see.
It's like when the thing on the DVD screen hits the corner. Like, it's just perfect alignment right there. Frustrating seeing the White Sox defense give up a run. Obviously, you're not going to win if you can't score. But especially going into that eighth inning and even that seventh inning or the sixth inning when they had Abreu on third base, all they needed from Gavin Sheets was a fly ball to drive him in on the sac fly to tie that game. Frustrating that Johnny Cueto, who was able to get out of so many dangerous situations tonight, that's what ends up burning him, is a routine sacrifice fly that if just even Elvis Andrus cuts that ball off so there isn't a play at third base, that runner stays at third and maybe Cueto's able to wiggle his way out and that game's still 0-0 after four.
And we've seen this time and time again with the White Sox with lack of focus. I know people want to get on Yoan for laziness, and I think that's a lazy thing to say about him. The man has played spectacular defense for the most part. He misplayed that ball. That is on him. The error goes on Gavin. Like, he gets the credit or blame for the error, but Yoan Moncada's got to grab that ball. I know it took a tricky hop, but you have to understand that going past you is not an option there. And then behind that, Johnny Cueto's got to be backing him up correctly where the ball's going. He's got to see the flight of the ball and then having his back literally there to cut that ball off so the run doesn't score. But I just think White Sox have done this all the time. It's really, really frustrating to see that they've had lack of focus, and they're a team that plays on the margins. They need to pick up the ball when it's hit to them. They need to execute when runners are in scoring position, because lately they've been hitting home runs, but usually, like yesterday, two home runs. That was it. 3-2 win, and they won by the slimmest of margins. Today, no runs scored, but you probably get out of that inning, and it's probably 0-0 when Johnny Cueto leaves that game. So, you know, maybe you feel a little bit better when you escape something like that. And Johnny Cueto has stranded 79% of the runners that have been on base with him. He has a special gift for that this year, where Major League Baseball is at 72.5. This guy is doing it at a higher clip. So you get in front of that ball, runner stays at third, Johnny Cueto does his magic like he usually does, and he gets out of that inning.
Well, and I just want to show people what it looked like, too. Moncada trying to go for that ball. You said lack of focus. I do see Garcia saying lack of focus in the chat as well. Can't say it better. He's off to his side, not in front of that ball, reaching over to his right. You can also see that he's looking forward and not at the ball. So it's just basically lack of focus, probably trying to be real quick as well because France just slid into third, so maybe just trying to grab and make a swipe tag. But again, that's where veteran Johnny Cueto needs to be backing him up. I mean, there's three places there where that play could have been saved and wouldn't have hit the camera perfectly if the White Sox are able to back it up there. And against a team like Seattle or a team like Cleveland or any of these playoff teams, even Houston, we've seen teams take the extra base against the White Sox and their defense not be able to hold up to the challenge. And especially against the Seattle team where they have runners like Sam Haggerty or Julio Rodriguez or even Ty France, who's athletic enough. Like, that's where the White Sox need to improve, especially if they are going to make this miraculous one to run to make the to win the AL Central. Because if you're in the playoffs, you're going to need to be tighter defensively in these situations because, again, in a 1-0 ball game in the playoffs, all you need is that one home run to turn that game around and to bring it closer. So that's probably been the most frustrating part of the White Sox season, is just seeing the continual mistakes from this defense and the base running mistakes as well.
And you guys can't blame it on Tony. You cannot blame it on Tony.
No.
Well, they
have nothing to do with this game.
They blew that play. I obviously we can't, you know, show a replay or anything, but I thought what was really cool as in addition to the ball hitting the camera lens, mm-hmm. which was pretty awesome. The broadcast had the angle from right field.
Yeah.
And you saw that ball make not one but two goofy bounces, first on Yoan Moncada, and then at the end when it jumped up, I mean, it was pretty much rolling at that point, and then it just jumps up and hits the camera. Obviously, like you say, Herb, if Johnny Cueto's in the right spot there, then that doesn't happen. But they blew that defensive play. But, I mean, come on, the bigger blunder is the offense. Yep. I mean, you know, you talk about a playoff game and one run makes all the difference, and here, you know, listen, the White Sox are a bad defensive team. I think the White Sox were probably okay with being, maybe not this bad, but being a not-so-great defensive team because they thought they were going to be a really, really good offensive team. And here we are on another night where, you know, they haven't been shut out that much, but here we are on another night where they can hit the ball, but they can't get anybody home once they're on base. And I think that remains, that has been the biggest problem since day one. That remains the biggest problem here on day, you know, 130 or whatever you said it was. So that's what needs to change, and it has changed at times. They've figured out a way here recently, every once in a while, to get enough runs to support their starting pitching or their starting and relief pitching effort. Tonight, not the case.
Well, and also in game 133, what is continuing to hurt the White Sox? Injuries. Luis Robert comes back for this Mariners series after taking some time to go to the paternity list to go be with the be at the birth of his son, and he came back today. Yesterday, played in the game, was pretty unsuccessful getting some swings and at-bats in. And today he had two at-bats, struck out in both of them, struck out in the top of the fifth. Then he went into the dugout. Adam Engel was a defensive replacement, and he was removed from the game with a bruised left hand. X-rays were negative. He's day-to-day. So it's basically the same injury. It's a little bit different because in the first at-bat in the top of the second, first pitch, inside pitch to Gilbert, hits Robert on the hands, and then Gordon Beckham points out that in the next pitch, he's basically a foot back or a step back in the batter's box just because Gilbert pitches inside. The main thing that's been hurting Luis is when he's not getting the barrel of the bat on the ball, the vibrations end up hurting his wrist, just sends a stinger through his hands. So being that close ends up scaring him, moving back off, and Luis really wasn't able to have a good at-bat tonight due to the wrist injury. Herb, what do you make of this wrist injury? Because it is clearly just nagging and has lasted since August 12th at this point.
And the bat you're talking about, when he moved back, there was a fastball low and outside in the zone that he didn't even offer at, and then the pitch he struck out was high fastball, which he didn't swing at all either. So he wasn't interested in swinging the bat because his wrist is hurt, and this is where you got to protect the player from himself. I'm sure he wants to play. I'm sure he can play and give you good caliber off our defense out there, but his offense is just atrocious because his wrist is hurt. It's not broken. It's just bruised, but you could see the swings he's putting out there today with the one-handed swing late, and that's where they, Miguel Cairo took him out and had a defensive replacement, Adam Engel, eventually. So this is where the White Sox, when he initially hurt himself in the Detroit game sliding into the Jonathan Scope, they should have put him on the IL. That's revisionist history. But now is a chance to put him on the IL and let him heal up fully. Let him get his wrist back to however close to 100% he can get to, because he's kind of useless at the plate right now. He can probably put bat to the ball, but I'm not sure if him swinging the bat is making his wrist even worse right now, because that Logan Gilbert pitch, it did hit his wrist, and then he swung through and probably trying to hold up on the swing caused a little bit more torque on his wrist and hurt him further. So yeah, he needs to be put on the IL. I know he, at 100% or close to 100%, helps his team, but right now he's not. I'm sure you can get away with A.J. Pollock playing center field, left field, Eloy, or whoever, but right now Luis Robert's not helping.
Vinny, I just want to ask you, though, because you've read so many of these team press releases and stuff, the fact that they said was removed from the game with a bruised left hand, I think mostly the injury that he's been dealing with has been regarded to a wrist injury. So do we think that maybe he was actually hit on the hand, and that being hit on the hand with that first pitch of the game, it caused a new injury, or do you think this is all just kind of stemming from the same place? I know you're not in Seattle, not with the team.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea is
play
that
a doctor on TV, I'd appreciate it.
Doogie Howser over here. I think the idea is probably that those things can be kind of general sometimes. Sometimes the initial announcement of what they think happens ends up being different, depending on you know, what those further evaluations that they always talk about kind of yield. It's very possible he was not hit in the wrist. I mean, I suppose you could just watch it and find out. But, you know, all that stuff's connected there. And, you know, if you're hurting here and you get hit here, I would imagine it's going to, you know, even if maybe it, like when you move it or something like right. that, it's going to, you know, make it even worse. So, listen, the bottom line is that Luis Robert's hand area has not improved over the course of the last month. And that's been a real detriment to the White Sox. I honestly don't think that, you know, I think that the idea that they should have put him on the IL for that roster spot was kind of overblown. You know, I tweeted about it a few days ago, just kind of like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with that extra roster spot? First, it was, you know, everybody was clamoring for Adam Haseley to be on the team, I don't think. Now it's Mark Payton again. Like, now, you know, but I get the idea about when you're talking about the health of the player, Herb. You know, they probably shouldn't have been plugging him back into these games. Yeah. I think revisionist, yes, hindsight's 20/20. He probably did enough for them to think that he could help them in his role as an offensive player. Obviously, as time went on, that became less and less the case. And here we are, even after so many days off, still seeing those same things that we saw so drastically in that, or dramatically, I should say, in that Baltimore series. If you're still seeing that, you really can't keep sending him out there because, listen, you can call him effective when certain conditions are met. I think, you know, it was back during that Baltimore series that Tony La Russa explained it as, well, when he hits the ball, you know, right on the screws, it's good. It looks good.
Right.
Yeah, but when he's not doing that, it looks like he's in pain, and I don't think anybody really wants that right now. If he can help you as a defense and base-running-only guy, make him that. You know what I mean? Because I'm sure he can help them in those situations. And if you don't want to put him on the IL because there's really nobody else to call up, then that's fine. Use him as that specialist-type guy off the bench. But right now, I think it's very clear for everybody to see that he is not swinging the bat at 100%. And in order for them to get the player that they think he can be, even if it's at, you know, a far less percentage than 100, he's going to need to be able to swing the bat a lot better than this. And he's a guy you've made a long-term investment into. You don't want to ruin anything there. So I'm not going to go crazy on them for not putting him on the IL, but it's quite obvious that every time he goes up to swing the bat, things aren't going so great right
and
now.
And I see people, Wayne, Paul, and others saying that Luis Robert's soft. How is he soft? Is he's trying to play through an injury?
Right.
Like, that is not the opposite of soft. This man is trying to give the White Sox whatever he can give them, and he's trying to give him a quality at bat, but he cannot. He's hurt. That's not soft. And yes, Wayne, it's singular. Robert. One, not Roberts, Robert. There's only one of them. So I just get mad when people just go off on these guys as if they know him. He's not soft. He's playing through an injury. That's the opposite of what you're talking about. And you're asking, what has he done when he's healthy? Last year, he slashed 338, 373, and 567. That's goddamn great. Not good, great. When he's healthy, he is an MVP candidate. I don't give a goddamn if he's having a bad year this year. I'm getting mad because people are just talking all out there, out of pocket right now. You guys will be on Luis Robert's jock next year when that man's healthy. Stop the hate.
Well, and I'm pretty sure, too, on August 12th of 2021, he returned from his injury. So kind of funny that he gets hurt on August 12th, 2022. And in 2021, he's returning at that date. But from August 12th last year to the end of the season, he had 12 home runs. I mean, like, if the White Sox had any player from August 12th this year to the end of the season hitting 12 home runs, I mean, like, that would be, yes, their jerseys would be selling like hotcakes. I mean, it'd be insane.
If they had a few players who had hit significantly more than 12 home runs on the entire season.
Right. I mean, Herb's saying Andrew Vaughn's the best player hitter on the team just because he's got 15 home runs.
He is.
But even going up there, I mean, I understand your comments and getting frustrated, but I mean, like, I saw someone say, Yoan Moncada's an automatic out. He's 2-for-4 tonight.
And hit balls 109 miles per hour and 107 miles per hour. Come on now. You can have hate, and you can not like the player, but let's deal with facts. The man had a good game offensively. Stop it.
And the thing, too, with Robert, like, calling him soft, you talked about Tony's comment of when he hits it on the screws, he's all right. It's just when he doesn't get it on that barrel. The thing that I kind of love and cringe at with Robert is he's swinging at every single pitch with the force that he always does. The main issue is that when he's doing it, he's coming off with his hands just because I think he has so much soreness in it. But his actual torque, his actual effort, I mean, he is still unloading on balls or trying to unload on balls the same exact way that he has before the injury. And I think that's probably also causing part of the injury because there was a play in the fourth inning last game against Marco Gonzalez where Gonzalez ends up running in on him. Luis makes contact, but it's in front of the barrel, more in on the bat, and you just immediately see the pain come on his face, and you just immediately just see the grimace on his face. He just looks uncomfortable, and it's mainly because he's still swinging with all of that power. It's not like he is mainly focusing on breaking balls and trying to hit the slower stuff so he can at least, you know, maybe line up the barrel. He's still swinging at fastballs, and I think, you know, you can't really hurt or, you know, shit on his effort. Because his effort is there. It's just he's playing hurt to the point where I see fans being like, he needs a wrist guard. I mean, he's not even using a wrist guard right now. I mean, maybe something small like that would help Luis swing the bat, but it's truly either something that will only get helped with, you know, actual maybe like a structural aid, like a wristband, or time off.
I think
like,
time is probably the answer. This is a hangover type situation. Mm-hmm. I think the only thing that's curing that is time. Mm-hmm. So
get a couple eggs in you.
You know, I don't think Luis's strategy is the cold shower or a bunch of coffee. I think he's just got to sit there and wait for it to get better. And if the only way that that's going to happen is by him not swinging, then maybe that's the way to go.
Maybe some ibuprofen. He would be a very, very expensive defensive replacement and pinch runner, but he's still good at those two things. Want to let you know about PointsBet Sportsbook. They are the best sportsbook out there. You don't have to worry about them being unhealthy or being on the IL. They're always up and available, and they're counting down the days until the football season with a new offer every day until the season kicks off. From now until September 8th, PointsBet's Power Hour will unlock a new daily offer from 12 to 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. So sign up for PointsBet now using code CHGO to also get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Don't miss out on your chance to get daily access to free bets, boosted odds, and so much more now through September 8th. But that's not it. Since football season is starting this week, we have to let you know about this fantastic deal for new users. If you sign up using code CHGO and bet $51 or more pregame or live on the Bears game versus the Niners, you will receive a either Midway Varsity hoodie or crew neck sweatshirt. We are popping up what those look like on the screen. Herb said he's a hoodie guy. Vinny and I are more crew neck guys. You'll have your choice of either the hoodie or the crew neck. You'll also get the QB1 shirt that is a recent release for the CHGO locker. You also get a CHGO membership and two risk-free bets up to $2,000 on PointsBet. This is the best deal in town, and it just got even better. So download the PointsBet app today and use code CHGO to take advantage of this limited-time offer. And don't just bet. Live your bet life at PointsBet. If you or someone who has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER for crisis counseling and referral services. Herb, how was Atlanta?
Atlanta was beautiful. A little hot, but beautiful city. The ballpark's great, all except the tomahawk chop they did like 17 times. Prompted by baseball ops there. Like, the stadium ops is like, okay, it's time for this racist shit again. Go ahead and do it. But otherwise, that ballpark is a top... It was a top five before they started doing all that, like, multiple times. I've got in my top 10 right now of the 19 I've seen.
And how close are you sitting?
We sat in the 300 level, so it was a good vantage point. We're probably just over the Braves' dugout in the 300 level. They have 300, and then they have 400 and 500. So it was right in the middle. It was nice, about $100 seats each.
Would it be outrageous for me to ask you to do a countdown of the top 10, or is that a segment that's coming up in a future program?
No,
Well, let me get through the ad read, and then we'll do...
Oh, you were done with that. All right. Go ahead,
Herb got those fantastic $100 tickets in the 300 level at Truist Park thanks to the Game Time app. Game Time is the hottest new ticketing site that makes it easier than ever to score the best deals on tickets to sports, concerts, and shows. If you ever dreamed of sitting in a seat you never thought you could, either at the 50-yard line, courtside, behind home plate, again, the 300 section at Truist Park, it's possible with the Game Time app. It's the biggest last-minute price drops that can be found on these seats that you never thought you could buy. You won't find a better deal on this season on White Sox tickets, maybe Bears tickets with them starting up their new season. In Herb's case, Braves tickets. It's created by fans for the fans, and it guarantees the lowest price. And if you see a price on a different site like Herb did, you can contact their fantastic customer support, and they will hook you up with the difference. So if you love CHGO...
110% difference.
110% difference, baby. So if you love CHGO, then you love Game Time. The best way to support us is by buying your tickets through the link in the description. So go into the YouTube description or the podcast description, hit that Game Time link, download that app, and join over 15 million people who have downloaded the Game Time app and score the best seats to all of your favorite events. All right, you got a top 10?
Wrigley 10, American Family, which is Miller Park, 8, 9. 8 is Citi Field. Truist was 7th. Coors Field is 6. I've only been there once and it was great. It should improve in my rankings because people think that my 5th one should be lower, which is Kauffman Stadium. I love Kansas City as a city, and I love Kauffman Stadium as a stadium. Camden Yards is 4. Petco and San Diego's 3. PNC was long time my number 1, but then this year I went to Oracle Park, and it's not even close. It's the best stadium in baseball. It's by far, and I love PNC, but Oracle is another world than all the rest of these parks.
Where's the G rate on that list?
12th.
All right, so 2 back from Wrigley?
It's just... There's nothing there. Great food, great drinks. It's just, if you go to different parks, you're like, man, we have a mediocre park. And that's what G-Rate is. Not good, not bad, just mediocre, just fine.
How many out of 30?
I've been to 19.
Okay. How many have you been to, Vinny?
Oh, boy. I don't know off the top of my head. It's not that many.
Okay.
It's not that many.
You don't have a top 10, maybe?
Or would
you have
not top 10? Offhand.
Right.
No. Yeah.
Mine's very easy. I've been to 3 parks. I've been to Guaranteed Rate, I've been to Wrigley, and I've been to Miller. So it's very easy for me. Miller's last, White Sox second. Unfortunately, Wrigley's first.
Oh, my favorite park is Miller Park, for sure. Oh, yeah. It's my favorite place. Huh?
It's too hot.
It's too hot. They can close the roof.
Yeah, but
air conditioning.
But the air conditioning didn't work last time I went.
Well, that... Okay.
That's a
one-time thing. That's like when you read a Yelp review of a restaurant and they're like, they didn't bring me my fries on time. I'm like, this has nothing to do with the caliber of the restaurant. You just had an unfortunate experience.
Didn't that happen though in 2021? I think when they played up in Miller that the AC was broke too.
I don't know if they have an air condition now or never had one because of Miller Park, but the day I went, it was White Sox versus Brewers.
I was there for that.
Yeah, it was like Carlos Rodon versus like Burns,
and it was Rodon like 110 degrees outside.
Yeah, and yeah. Burns got, Rodon got crushed that day. Before that, he was having a great season. And yeah, it was hot, but I felt comfortable. I love that ballpark. And literally, that and Chase Field are the same ballpark, pretty much. I like Miller Park much better than Chase Field. Just
Why?
Because I think
sausages.
The tailgate situation you can do down there. Arizona, it's just downtown. No one's in downtown Phoenix. It's just garbage. I don't like the state of Arizona. It's a terrible state.
It's probably
going down there in February.
What's the Colt Stadium?
Lucas Oil.
Yeah, Lucas Oil. It's like my feelings about Indianapolis and Lucas Oil. I went to Lucas Oil the day after the Super Bowl for the Indiana Pacers job fair. You would think that
it was
a ghost town.
You are citing your opinions on a football stadium because you were there for an Indiana Pacers job.
And no one was in that damn city. It's the largest city in the state of Indiana, the armpit of America, and no one's in the damn city at like 12. It's like lunchtime, and no one's even out having lunch.
And I can agree. Like, I'm biased because I don't like Arizona as a state, even though Phoenix, our trip out there was fine. But Miller Park, there's something about it. Maybe the proximity, the fun time we had pregame. I still had a good time at Miller Park, even though the White Sox didn't do well that game. I remember that. That's the game I think Johan either missed home plate and got out eventually, where it was another flub, another focus problem with Johan. But I always have a great time at Miller Park. The one time I went to Chase Field, they gave out great uniforms for the free gift, but I just didn't feel like the ballpark was conducive to having a good time at it. Because I did have a good time, but not as fun as Miller Park or American Family, whatever it's called now.
Since you're comparing AmFam and Chase, would you guys rather slide down the slide or be in the, like, you know,
slide
being in the
slide.
Hot tub.
Slide down the slide, and it's not even close.
Yeah, I don't want to catch disease.
But let's
well,
say
I mean, I like
tub.
A hot tub in general,
private
but in this situation.
You get
yeah.
private access to the hot tub, slide down the slide.
Slide down slide the slide. 100%.
I would break my arm like that dude with the LA Dodgers before I would jump into that water. Ugh.
I don't know. I just
Minute Maid is good. I liked Minute Maid. I went there too many times last year, but that was...
They
I
have
liked
to have air conditioning there.
They do, yes.
I'm about to say.
Would you guys rather slide down the slide or ride the train?
Ride the train.
No, slide down the slide.
I think I'm
Bernie Brewer. Come on, man.
I think I'm slide down
no
the
one
slide.
No one wants to be like Junction Jack. You remember Junction Jack?
No.
He was the Astros' old mascot from their NL Central days. He was a rabbit who was also a train conductor, and he rode the little train up there.
I do remember that.
Yeah, and Junction Jack.
But
yeah.
Now I think they just put like a real dude up there. I think
yeah, there's a guy who drives the train. It's full of oranges.
And
now, though,
yeah, and now they got like, isn't there a real mascot like Orbit or something?
Orbit, he's an alien. That makes sense. But Junction Jack, come on, he was kind of fun.
Orbit seems like a ripoff of Gritty, the Flyers mascot.
Orbit is an alien. First. He's an actual. He makes sense with his team.
Again, whatever. I guess. Anyways, let's talk about the White Sox. Let's move on.
Let's talk about the White Sox old defunct mascot Waldo the White Sox Wolf, who was great.
I thought it was Ribby.
Well, there was Ribby and Rhubarbs from a long time ago. When I was a kid, it was Waldo the White Sox Wolf. He was only a cartoon. They didn't have a guy walking around as him.
Yeah, you were part of Waldo's Club.
Yeah, Waldo's Kids Club. Yeah.
Waldo, Ribby and Rhubarb, or whatever the fuck, or Southpaw.
Well, Southpaw is way last, for sure.
Really?
Ooh. Not a big Southpaw guy. Sorry, Southpaw.
I'm a Southpaw guy. Give me Southpaw.
No chance.
I didn't go to the ballpark with Ribby and Rhubarb.
Yeah, they are hilariously ridiculous, though. They are like Crazy Crab level of ridiculousness.
Crazy Crab?
Giants? San Francisco Giants? 80s mascot Crazy Crab?
Oh, jeez.
Guys, come on
Crazy
now.
Crazy Crab Giants.
Only mascot I remember is Bird Zerk.
Oh, no.
I remember Bird Zerk.
He's Crazy Crab.
Yeah, at the creepy. Cougars game.
Cougars game
yeah.
all the time. He's a mascot Hall of Famer, Bird Zerk.
Bird Zerk.
I kind of like Crazy Crab.
Oh,
just
Crazy
because,
Crab's the greatest.
I mean, first off, his little
Jesus
mustache.
Christ.
But I like
God,
I like the fact that they made him
a nightmare.
Just a dirty, ugly crab with a little hat.
There is no greater mascot in the history of mascots than Crazy Crab.
That is a nightmare. You guys ever see the Dave Chappelle show where they did the like Sesame Street type of thing about VD, venereal diseases? That looks like one of the characters.
Crazy Crab is fantastic.
Ribby and Rhubarb. I mean, Crazy and Crab, I guess I would rather have the Dave Chappelle looking like VD mascot compared to Ribby and Rhubarb, who just look like Sesame Street.
They're just bad Muppets, yeah. But they were, but again, kind of funny.
But then again, Southpaw, kind of also a bad Muppet. Anyways, yeah. Let's talk about Johnny Cueto and Logan Gilbert, who pitched today. Johnny Cueto, pretty good. Again, escaping jams left and right, was very good at doing that. Six innings pitched, 5 hits allowed, 1 earned run, 3 walk, and 3 strikeouts. Finish at 96 pitches. You were kind of iffy on when Cairo took him out. Herb, Logan Gilbert went 6 innings, 5 hits, no earned runs, no walks, and 9 strikeouts with 101 pitches. But yeah, you were kind of iffy when Cueto got pulled and Jimmy Lambert came in with runners on first and second.
I mean, it wasn't the wrong move. I was just like, okay, Cueto knows how to get out of jams, as I was saying with the error he made earlier, or the error that Gavin Sheets made earlier, and then the not backing up a third base. Like, if they get to that ball, I think Cueto gets out of that jam with no runs scored. Right in that inning, I think he gave up a hit, and then he walked the next hitter. It was right for Miguel Cairo to come out and give Jimmy Lambert that inning. And James Michael Lambert, and Vinny calls him a different name.
James Tiberius Lambert, of course.
Did a great job of getting out of that inning because he's been filthy this year. And Tony calls him Adam Wainwright, and I scoffed at that initially. And like, goddamn, Tony, you were right. This man is great.
I'll tell you this. Jason said on the broadcast that Jimmy Lambert told him he had never seen an episode of Seinfeld, which leads me to believe that he would in no way get my very, very deep Star Trek reference. No.
No, you would not get your deep Star Trek reference. What? How do you not see Seinfeld at this point?
It's hard to do.
Especially Jimmy Lambert. He's older than me, at least.
He's older than you. He's not older than us.
Right, but, like, I mean, like, I feel like if you...
He's probably seen every episode of The Big Bang Theory in reruns, I'm guessing.
And the OC. I mean, he's a California kid. He probably didn't watch...
He was a Packer fan.
Yeah, watch a lot of Seinfeld. I didn't watch a lot of Seinfeld. The only Seinfeld episode I've seen is the masturbating one. That's the only one. That's literally the only one I've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, at the same time...
You didn't want to see more?
Well, Martin was going on, so I was... At the time, you know, nowadays, you could just, you know, if Seinfeld was going the same time, I would just DVR Seinfeld and then watch Martin live. But, you know, back in the day, my friend, we used to play basketball on Thursday, so we either watch Martin or go play some hoops, and my friend would never come because, like, I'm watching Seinfeld. I'm like, what's this Seinfeld garbage? It's not going to last. Get out of here. And I mean, I get it, and I've never really seen Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's probably not my type of humor. It's funny. It's kind of like Bruce Springsteen. I know you love Bruce. I get why he's popular, but he's not my thing. Other people like Seinfeld. Other people like Curb. It's just not my thing. I'm more of a Martin guy.
You and Jimmy Lambert can...
We can commiserate about not seeing it. It's like, man, remember when we didn't see those episodes? See, and that's the thing. I would watch How I Met Your Mother, and people like, ugh, How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, I don't like that
You're
show.
A fucking idiot.
Yeah.
See, I was big into How I Met Your Mother, and then they had the finale, and it was just like the worst thing.
I mean, 1 through 6 were great, and then 6 through 9 where the actor Jason Segel went off to do real good movies, and then he was acting like he was in Minnesota. That was a dumb angle. And then he was just, like, away for a while. He's like, I'm calling you from my dad's house in Minnesota. And you could tell, obviously, he's in some soundstage in probably Hawaii while I was doing Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Shout out to Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Great movie.
Let's move on.
Awesome movie. A lot of different tangents today. We're not even talking about this game.
No, I mean, what is there to talk about? The White Sox just didn't drive in runs, and it was unfortunate. We can look at Logan Gilbert's pitch mix. The main thing, he was just locating his fastball up, and the White Sox were able to do nothing with it. 29 swings on his fastball today. 10 swings and misses. He also had 9 called strikes, so called strikes plus whiff percentage on his fastball alone. 34%, that's above major league average at 27%. 34% is pretty much elite level. And then you look at the called strike plus whiff percentage on a sinker. White Sox really weren't able to do anything with any type of fastball today. And the slider and knuckle curve were able to keep righties at bay. And we saw that a lot with A.J. Pollock. Not really too much with Eloy Jimenez and Jose Abreu. But really the only person that had consistent success against Logan Gilbert today was your click to pick, Yoan Moncada.
Yoan had 2 hard hit balls. Loy had 2, I think, against Logan Gilbert, 3 for the day. They were hitting him hard, as I said. They were just hitting most of those balls right at players. So when they did barrel up the ball, they did good things with it, but not too many times. And the 1-for-7 when runners in scoring position tells you as much when it was needed for them to drive in runs. I was thinking, like, they had so many 3-0 counts where they just took them in. I think at least three 3-0 counts, not all versus Logan Gilbert, but I think 2 of them, and they just looked them in and they took them. And I know we only got like 1 home run and it's Gavin Sheets' bat on a 3-0 count. got to take advantage. I thought we're doing the fuck it thing. If we're doing the fuck it thing, 3-0 counts and middle fastballs you need to drive. That is where you get offense from. And people in Major League Baseball, and you said the numbers a couple weeks ago, they're doing really well versus 3-0 counts. And it seems like the White Sox are the only team that is taking those 3-0 counts. And then when the 3-1 count comes, they're swinging at balls above the strike zone. I think Gavin did that twice. And then they're going to throw a filthy slider on 32, and you're going to strike out.
Sox are still at – they have two home runs now on 3-0 counts, so I'm not sure who
– Gavin, A.J. Pollock probably?
Probably. I mean, maybe Elvis. Elvis, maybe it was that grand slam where he was up against Nick Gordon. Maybe that was 3-0. I mean,
that could not happen. That Tony would have came back and cussed everybody out. It's like an opposition player?
But that's the thing. Tony wasn't there during that game. That was Saturday when Tony has been in Arizona. I'm telling
you, he would have came back and be like, you're getting on that bench, Elvis. We don't do that to our teammates.
I don't know our opponents. Yeah, I don't know if they're benching A.J. Pollock. We'll have that discussion in a second. Let's just look at Johnny Cueto stuff. We'll take an ad break, and then we'll talk about A.J. Pollock and the Sox, and especially we'll talk about tomorrow's game, Michael Kopech versus Luis Castillo. Johnny Cueto in this one, though, mainly focused his cutter through that 28 times today, his changeup 19 times, his sinker 19 times, his four-seam fastball 17 times, and his slider 13 times. So Johnny Cueto, classic Johnny Cueto start, like Vinny mentioned in the pregame, consistency, mixing up his pitches, throwing whatever he wants in those counts, and he was effective, just making low average exit velocities. I think the average exit velocity was around 84. He was locating well, maybe not perfectly, but again, you really can't ask for much more than Johnny Cueto than six innings and no earned runs. So Johnny Cueto was great today and, again, escaped some jams when he got into them. So good job by Johnny Cueto. I'm looking for a FOCO bobblehead for Johnny Cueto. I see the Justin Fields one back there. Chicago, you've already got the best coverage for your favorite teams, so get fitted in the best sports gear around. FOCO has you covered from Soldier Field to the Front Room, north or south side, with hoodies, slippers, signs, bobbleheads, and everything in between. Get decked out like DeMar with apparel from the leaders in sports merch and collectibles, FOCO. If you're looking for the perfect gift for the football fan in your life, FOCO's got you covered with the hoodies that fight the Lake Michigan breeze. So check out FOCO.com or click the link in the description below. And for all non-presale items, use the promo code CHGO for 10% off. There's a Southpaw bobblehead for all you Southpaw fans at FOCO.com, F-O-C-O.com. There's a Dallas Keuchel bobblehead, but they also have some real fantastic City Connect jersey ones as well. So if you're looking to get maybe a Luis Robert one, a Tim Anderson one in the City Connect jerseys, check out FOCO.com. Again, FOCO.com. And for all non-presale items, use the promo code CHGO for 10% off. Again, the White Sox are three games back in the AL Central, 68-68. They are at 500 for the 25th time this year. Let's look at where they now rank for the worst team since 2010, or the teams that have been at 500 the most since 2010. The 2010 A's were at 533 games. 2011 Blue Jays at 530 for 33 games. 2019 Diamondbacks at 500 for 30 games. The 2021 Phillies were at 500 for 25 games. And now the White Sox with their 25th game at 500. You guys feeling like 33's in range here, or maybe they're going to pull ahead? What are we feeling?
Is it mathematically in range?
I think so.
It's really hard. How many? So 133 games.
They just
have to go
back and forth.
So, yeah, it would be 8 times 2, 16. Tie it. So they have more than 16 games left.
I mean, but to further that 500 thing, and Johnny Cueto starts, the White Sox are 10-10.
Which is.
But here's the thing. If they're going to be the most 500 team of all time, they have to finish 500, right?
Yes. They got to hurry up, too.
So how many games they got left?
68.
I think 29.
136. 136 or 133. 2 minus 136.
26.
Is 26.
26. They have to go 13-13.
They could do that easily. And also, like, that means 13 more times. So they can get up to 38 times at 500, right?
No.
Because if they lose and then win and lose and win, if they do that
13, right?
They do that for 26 straight games, I think that would be 13 more times at 500.
Right, 13.
So they could still 38 times at 500, which would be ridiculous. If they finish at 81-81, truly someone, like, this team or this this iteration of the White Sox, the 2022 White Sox, had to be cursed by somebody somewhere.
And maybe could they? Is it mathematically possible for them to win the division at 500?
Yes,
probably. But I think Cleveland would need to go on a real bad losing streak.
Oh, I mean, I'm just asking if it's possible. Yeah.
I think the Guardians and the Twins play a lot, so they could just cancel each other out, and they can go 500 themselves. So, yeah.
But the Sox need the Guardians to lose.
Okay, then the Twins can win, and then the Twins can lose versus the White Sox that last week.
I think the Sox would need to beat the Guardians, and the Twins would need to beat the Guardians every time they faced them, and then the Sox would need to just sweep the Tigers, or the Twins.
The Twins and Guardians play each other 8 more times.
Yeah, they have a bunch of games left versus each other.
Yeah, but if they go 4-4, that doesn't mean anything. The White Sox would need to win, and we're talking about them going 500.
Gotcha.
That's a lot of math.
Anyways.
Too much math for us.
Let's just do a little bit more math. Let's talk about the White Sox and their wins. So we talk about them winning 60, losing 60, and there's the other 42 that count. They haven't really added to the other category, which is good, and they're still above 500 in that. They're 19-18 in the other 42 that count. 49 wins and 50 losses, though. But again, you get 60 of each, so they're just kind of marching on. And again, the main thing that's important is going 6-0 in the other 42. So right now the Sox are at a fine spot. So I know this, you guys don't get much out of this bit.
No, it's very objective. it's very subjective rather. And you're putting objective numbers onto a subjective thing. And it's confusing.
We don't mail in West Coast post games, Paul, correct? You're absolutely incorrect about that.
If anything, we mail in games that are 1-0.
Yeah, what is there to talk about? It's 3-0. I mean, Vinny's mailing in the score.
There you go.
Okay, he's forgetting Cal Raleigh's monster shot here.
How could I? The first home run Reynaldo Lopez gave up this season.
That's crazy. Reynaldo's been a little shaky as of late. You worried, Herb?
No, I'm not worried. The guy, you know, any pitcher goes through some tough times. You know, hung a curveball to Cal Raleigh, who's hitting 23 home runs this year, the most of any catcher in Major League Baseball. And truth be told, it wasn't a terrible pitch. It was at the bottom of the zone. It did hang, but, you know, sometimes a good backstop who hits 23 home runs a year is going to catch you, and he caught that one.
Yeah, and hey, I mean, he's been pretty damn dangerous. He had a hit in the first game as well, and he's a guy that, again, we talk about how important catchers are and catchers that can hit. With Adley Rutschman, that guy might be a nightmare for the Sox, especially with now having to face all 30 teams. You're going to be seeing a lot more of Cal Raleigh in against the White Sox coming up. So Reynaldo Lopez, too, since July 23rd, an ERA of 3.18, 11 1/3 innings, 5 earned runs, I guess 12 and 1/3 innings, 5 earned runs now. So not awful, not great, but a lot of scoreless outings in there.
Take a 3.18 ERA over the season, over the full season. Yeah, so I'm fine with Reynaldo Lopez struggling right now.
Little bump in the road. Michael Kopech supposedly returning tomorrow for the Sox. It's going to be Luis Castillo, former Red, going up against Michael Kopech. What do we expect from Kopech, especially coming off of that start in Kansas City where he got injured during the warm-up, seemingly, and had to pitch a couple pitches to a couple batters in that Kansas City game. I think he ended up throwing about 17 pitches before getting pulled out. What are we expecting from Kopech tomorrow?
I mean, I think you'd expect him to be healthy. I don't think they're going to let him start if he's not. So, I mean, I would think that he is going to be able to give you the amount of innings a healthy pitcher can give you, certainly. So, listen, he's been pretty good this year. I think that he is a guy that's going to deliver a quality performance. I don't think, you know, we haven't seen him get rocked too many times this year. And really, with the way that, you know, Lucas Giolito has had kind of trouble finding his form, Kopech is a guy who could be in line for a playoff start, no doubt about it. So, if the White Sox are fortunate enough to get there. But, I think you can expect him to kind of go back to kind of the Kopech he's been for most of the season. Like I said, the only thing that has really derailed him a couple of times has been that knee, and it's going to be you know, a situation where they wouldn't let him pitch if he wasn't over that. So
yeah, and this is from James Fegan, who's out in Seattle, said his leg. Michael Kopech said his leg issue went away a few days after his start in Kansas City. So fingers crossed that just the 15 days on the IL helped him recover and got back to full strength. Luis Castillo now in a Mariners uniform. You excited to see him?
No, I wish he wasn't pitching tomorrow. I would rather for the White Sox face Robbie Ray, who they roughed up a little bit earlier here in Chicago, but he's been pitching much better. But Luis Castillo and then changeups, no, I'm good. I'm real good. Especially the White Sox struggling versus off-speed pitches, especially sliders. So Luis Castillo, I don't know if they saw him. It's like 2020. This is not going to be a good game for them. They just need to scratch over a couple runs, and maybe Michael Kopech can hold the Mariners at bay, as the White Sox pitchers and starters have done a great job in this two-game set already, only giving them 5 runs.
Yeah, and Luis Castillo has been fantastic coming over to Seattle in 6 games, a 2.39 ERA, 43 strikeouts in 37 and two-thirds innings. Got an ERA plus of 155. He's been fantastic all year. You mentioned him versus the White Sox. I don't think it's happened in his career. No games in 2020, no games in 2021, and no games in 2022. So definitely, if he has faced him, it's a very younger Luis Castillo. This is a guy now 30 years old. Has really found his stride and has been a fantastic ace-level pitcher. And the Mariners gave up a lot to get him on their team, and he's been fantastic for them so far. He does leave a lot of sinkers middle-middle, so maybe the Sox can get something. He's made 6 starts and has given up 3 home runs, and for an ace, that's a decent amount. That's like a lot-ish.
Get some singles tomorrow.
So, hey, yeah, shoot for the moon. We'll see if the White Sox can pull off the victory. We'll be with you at 2:30 for your pregame show.
And I forgot, too, like, the shadows won't be as drastic they were on Monday, as it was later in the afternoon when Lance Lynn was dominating the Seattle Mariners. But late in that game, the shadows will return, because that's when the game started the other day versus a Monday versus the Mariners. So it's imperative for the White Sox to get a couple runs early and then bring in their bullpen and have those shadows to their advantage.
Yeah, great point there. Gordon was talking a little bit about the shadows and how it just affects hitters. And, that's a great point right there, especially them starting at, 1 o'clock West Coast time? So, you know, come around 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, those shadows might get real ugly for the Sox and Mariners. I had some A.J. Pollock stats, Steven. Thank you for putting them together, but I know you'd rather get home than show those on the screen. So let's just end it. We'll talk about the A.J. Pollock stuff tomorrow. It can wait, truly, a couple hours here. So we will end the show. Sox lose 3-0 to the Mariners. They fall to 500 again, 68-68 on the year. Thank you to Vinny Duber for joining us in his John Prine shirt. You can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He's the CHGO White Sox beat writer. You can follow Herb Lawrence on Twitter at Ecknerwall23. He's the CHGO White Sox community leader. And I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. Thank you to Steven Nicholas for his production. And thank you to Fleetwood Mac for their 1979 album, Tusk. We'll talk to you tomorrow, and go White Sox.